All right, for those online, can you guys hear me online?
Yes.
Cool, thank you. All right, I think we're going to go ahead and get started because we have a lot to cover. So welcome to our presentation. Thank you so much for joining us after lunch. We hope you'll enjoy just sitting back, enjoying the lovely water theme slides that we have. So we have a number of speakers during this session. So rather than everyone introduce themselves now, we're going to have each person introduce themselves before their session or their segment that they speak about. So I'll start off. I'm Jalea Swanson. We're all from the University of Colorado Boulder. And I'm the Director of Collection Sustainability there and formerly the Head of Acquisitions. So acquisitions is where I'm coming through the Folio project. And today our presentation is going to be talking about various themes about Folio's influence on our organizational structure, communication, decision making, and organizational culture and change. I know it's some themes that have come up in other presentations as well, so we hope this complements other things that you have seen today or this week. And then we're going to talk about it through some real world examples and the different projects and can be very brief, almost like lightning talks about these projects. Metadata cleanup, patron access to rare and archival materials, replacing our create list from Sierra, and then moving collections due to renovations. And so with that, I'm going to hand it over to Nicole.
Hi, all. I'm Nicole Trujillo. I'm from Boulder. And before we get into, and I'm the Access and Discovery Librarian at Boulder. So before we get into the real-world examples, I just wanted to give you a brief overview of our library organization and how we were making some of our technical LMS decision-making pre-migration and post-migration. So first, the library organization. Oops. So this is kind of a 2020 organization chart. We're big. We have over 100 staff. So communication can be really hard, specifically cross-departmental communication. Information gets siloed really easily. So in this organization in 2020, we had this thing called working groups, which were basically these permanent committees. You can see committees around user experience, service points, communications, that we would just get together, say, there's some things we want to talk about. Sometimes these were role-based, oftentimes not. Oftentimes they were volunteer-based, to try to facilitate communication. However, we had some issues with these groups. We could make as many as we wanted. So we made as many as we wanted, which was a problem. They also sometimes had scope creep. We weren't always able to enact the decisions the working group decided on. So in 2021, we did a complete reorg, like complete, like we no longer had departments, we had teams. And in order to further facilitate cross teamwork now, we set up these things called we called guilds and pods. So these are still committees, but they're much more structured. So a guild was more like the old working group, but they were supposed to have a charter that clearly defined their role, and they were supposed to give permanent reports to the executive team and the library's dean. So that kind of helped from scope creep. It helped define and it helped make the decisions that they were able to make actionable. They're also less volunteer-based and more role-based, although we still had groups such as Open Access that people could join as volunteers. And then pods were like guilds, but they were time sensitive. So this also was an attempt to try to keep us from creating too much work for ourselves, because intentions don't always lead to actionable things that you can do and services that you can provide for your libraries. And then decision making also changed during this our migration from what we had, which was Sierra, to what we were going to, which was Folio. And that decision was made around the same time of the reorganization in 2020. So this is a simplified version of decision making, but in Sierra, if there was an issue, an idea that I might have for discovery, I would try to figure out the 10 people who might need to be involved and send them a long email. If there was a working group that happened to have some of those people, I would contact them. But eventually, it would all flow down to the library applications manager, who would make the actual change either through the vendor III or by going into the settings. So we had a Sierra for a long time. This was a pretty simple process. The hard part was me figuring out who to contact and making sure I was including the right voices in the decision. That was really a struggle I faced a lot. So that decision-making pathway was not going to work for Folio. It was just too many reworking of workflows. It was completely different software. So we kind of rethought and reimagine how we were making decisions. And what you will see here is that if you have a Folio issue or idea, that's now flowing down to that Folio guild, which is that committee based on a number of us with specific roles in the libraries that gets together to like make sure that any idea that our new workflow or process somebody is enacting is not going to negatively affect another application or process, because we all know how easy it is for that to happen in Folio. So, flows to the Folio Guild. The guild is managed by our library application specialist, so they still have a very important role in this. But we also now have a Folio product owner. So, that was a new role. We didn't have product owners before. And by doing that, they gave a point person to contact before talking to the full guild that could help you think through your ideas and make a better presentation. I didn't put them on here. I should have. I'm sorry, Law. But Law was also a recent some person who had joined our organization who joined. They had a separate Sierra tenant. They are a separate organization for accreditation reasons, but they decided to share a Folio tenant with us. So they're also a very important part of that Folio guild. Then you have the individual who does the thing, because the guild is a group of people. You don't want the, a group of people can't necessarily do the thing. You want a person to do the thing. So we can make sure that work gets placed in the role of the person who does the work, and our work became much more role defined so that you could find the person responsible. And then you have your various vendors or settings that actually do the change that you're trying to implement. So now I'm going to turn it over to Emily to talk through our first of the real world examples.
Okay, can you hear me?
Yep.
Great. Okay, let me just get my notes. Okay, hi everyone. My name is Emily Semenoff, and I'm the Catalog Management Librarian at CU. So when we decided to move to Folio from Sierra, one of the major tasks we had to figure out was how Folio was going to work with our data. We had been using III products since the 90s, and a lot of challenges came with moving from a system we were all comfortable with to one that was structurally very different and still very much in development. One of the main challenges was not only how we were going to catalog, but also manage our metadata. Like any system, we had a lot of incorrect mark in our catalog that had come in over the years due to poorly cataloged vendor records, user errors, and we still had errors from the initial migration to Millennium a few decades earlier. We had to figure out how to both deal with those errors and figure out how to move our data and processes to Folio without creating a whole slew of new errors. Next slide, please. So one of the first things we did was to create the metadata management pod. This served as a touch point for anything metadata related when it came to Folio. But we quickly realized that there were too many areas to cover by a single group, and it was going to become unwieldy very quickly. This led to the creation of several subpods to focus on individual areas of concern. We have single cataloging, serials, which dealt with both cataloging and receiving, data import, which also focused on data export and batch processing, and physical processing, which handled any data that dealt with the physical items in our collection. And through that, we turned the metadata management pod into a hub where we could keep one another updated on the subpod's progress without needing to discuss every detail from these different areas in a single meeting. We prepared for Folio for about 3 years, and over that time, it became apparent that it was not going to have the tools we needed to effectively clean up a lot of the errors I mentioned previously. So part of pre-migration was a concerted effort to use Sierra's create lists and batch processing tools to do what we could. Having the multiple subpods alongside the main pod helps to streamline this process and made it slightly less overwhelming than if we try to do everything through the metadata management pod. Next slide, please. And then migration arrived in June of 2023. Did we do everything we wanted? No, but the pod and subpods put us in a position where the migration of our data and processes went relatively smoothly, so much so that by the end of 2023, we realized that most of them were no longer needed. Yes, there were still problems, but it was clear that the pre-migration structure could go. Single cataloging and data import were dissolved shortly after migration, the metadata management pod itself that fall, and serials at the end of the year. Physical processing continued on, and it became a pod, and then as of this year, guilds, just because there are still issues to deal with in that area. But the rest felt manageable to be dealt with in our day-to-day work. Next slide, please. However, soon we realized that maybe we were a little too confident when it came to all those metadata errors we'd been trying to clean up. Individual cleanup projects were happening, but it was unclear who was working on what and what still needed to be done. And when new issues were discovered, it wasn't always obvious to people where to report them. So to meet this need, the Catalog Cleanup Pod was created in January of 2024. And it involves a wide range of expertise. We have not only cataloging and authority control, but also reporting and discovery, which allows us to not only collect the metadata we need, but also make sure the fixes serve our patrons as well as ourselves. This pod has given us a place to report on work currently being done, as well as enables us to better see what projects still need attention and gives people a clear place to report new problems as they arise. Next slide, please. So this is what our structure for handling incorrect metadata is currently. The Physical Processing Guild deals with any issues surrounding our physical items, and the Cleanup Pod deals with any other large metadata issues needing attention. And now I believe I'll be turning it over to Claire.
Thanks, Emily. My name is Claire Hoag, and I'm the Director of Engaged Spaces at CU Boulder University Libraries.
I'm also the local product owner of Folio for our institution. And during our library's migration to Folio, I was the head of materials management. In our previous system, our unit's work was already intersecting across our organization, but with Folio, it became even more of a cornerstone for us. With our migration to Folio and our shared catalog with the Law Library on campus, we connected our materials transiting in a more transparent way, meaning that we had an opportunity to utilize the tools that exist in Folio that made for a more streamlined process of getting patron requests for our rare and archival materials and directly sending these from their housed locations to our reading room. So, one of the first workflows that we wanted to check in on was how do we develop a new process for patron access to rare books and archival materials? Our Rare and Distinctive Collections team, or RAD, was comprised of our government information, archival, rare books, and our maps collections. We also have a significant amount of these collections housed in our off-site preservation facility, Pascal. In Sierra, patrons did not have a direct way to place a hold on an item in most of these collections. They would have to click on a link to fill out a form to request the item, and then the processing and transit would happen all on the back end. We knew that there was a way to utilize the new system to create a more streamlined process for those collection managers who were interested. Next slide, please. Our question really started gaining traction in our physical processing pod, soon to be Guild, or PPP. This happened for two reasons. The first is that the members of that pod played a significant role in the existing workflow, specifically me as the head of materials management, our head of acquisitions, our head of resource description, and our head of preservation. The second reason is that we knew that we had overlap with other existing Folio groups that guided our understanding of how Folio could be used to enhance the existing workflow. The PPP had folks representing knowledge from pods across our libraries, meaning that the expertise was vast. The first step was to create our RAD Folio physical processing subpod as a subpod of the physical processing pod. Again, pods are meant to be short term, and we set our end date for 6 months after our start. The subpod was comprised of representatives from across our libraries, services, materials management, resource description, acquisitions, rare and distinctive collections, access and discovery, preservation, and the law library to ensure that our workflows would be aligned with their needs as well. We set out on a listening tour with the collection managers of the RAD collections, proposing a workflow for requesting reading room items and also doing a general check-in to see how their collections might be better served using Folio. Next slide, please. The product of this subpod is our reading room workflow. This included changing the status from restricted to available for all items that could be requested to be used in the reading room, both on-site and at Pascal, our off-site storage. We set up our existing reading room service point to be a pickup location. We then added a specific loan type to all these items called reading room, created very individualized notices and loan policies, and wrote a circulation rule. The notices help guide the patron to make their reading room appointment when the item has been checked in at the reading room. Finally, we added a public-facing note of place a hold for use in the reading room only. With future releases, we plan to limit the pickup location to only the reading room in the request policies, but we have not had consistent success with this just yet. A daily list is run to manage any holds that are placed for any non-reading room location. Patrons are now able to place their own hold. We can see that request and pull the item, route it to the reading room, and circulate it all from there. Here's what this looks like in our catalog. This was not applicable to all materials within these distinct collections, so we anticipate that we will revisit these conversations to ensure that we continue to go with the Folio upgrades. Next slide, please. A separate question that fell under the materials management umbrella is our consortial borrowing service, locally called Prospector. Materials management had served as the physical processing location for all our lending and borrowing to our consortial partners in the Colorado Alliance of Research Libraries. As one of the largest participating research institutions, Our contribution to the service is valued enormously, along with our patrons loving to use the service to have their more popular reading delivered directly to them. Our e-lending fell outside of our purview and was managed by our resource sharing team. At the time we were migrating to Folio, there were no institutions connected to their consortial borrowing systems using the D2IR or Direct to InReach connection or the InReach app. There had been significant development on the InReach app in Folio, but it wasn't quite ready for implementation in the summer of 2023. So we pulled our records out of the central server and stopped lending and borrowing through Prospector in May 2023, right before our migration, in order to clean up any lingering requests and patronage issues. We did not revisit the InReach app again until November 2024, when we received a directive from our Assistant Dean of Research and Innovation Strategies to answer the question, how can we restart our very popular consortial borrowing lending service, Prospector? Next slide, please. This process was complex and required an extreme amount of communication and collaboration, both with internal and external stakeholders. We approached this in a unique way, initially by gathering what I'll call project managers to help set up our structured groups. These members included our library application specialists, law library representation, and me. We knew that the work we were doing required internal expertise while also needing time to liaise with our external stakeholders, including Index Data, our host, Clarivate, who manages D2IR projects, and the Colorado Alliance of Research Libraries. Therefore, we created separate groups. We created an internal group called the Prospector Restart Pod, which included members from across the libraries, our Prospector and Pascal delivery coordinator, libraries application specialists, services, access and discovery, and a representative from Index Data. Shout out to Tara. We also included a list of proposed at-large members. These are folks who we anticipated needing to bring in for their expertise in certain areas, but we didn't want to make them attend all of the meetings. Finally, we identified a group of internal stakeholders who would need to be kept in the loop as the project progressed. Our goal with the Prospector Restart Pod was to successfully set up and restart Prospector in InReach in Folio, document and train internal staff on processes, and communicate with the libraries. This exciting return of a valued service was going to be very buzzworthy. On the external side, the project managers started having weekly hour and a half meetings with Clarivate, Index Data, and the Colorado Alliance of Research Libraries. These meetings were focused on configuring InReach settings in Folio, talking through and executing record contributions, planning for testing in the production environment, as there is not currently a way to test InReach transactions in the test system. And finally, turning on our lending and borrowing once testing was complete and all or most bugs were worked out. Next slide, please. After GVSU, CU Boulder was the second institution to go live on the D2IR connection and InReach app in Folio. As the project evolved, our internal pod added more people and had folks flowing in and out depending on where we were in the setup of the system. This was a uniquely challenging but extremely rewarding internal group to be a part of, from my experience. What was initially intended to be a pod that ran from November to the end of March just concluded at the end of August. From the Clarivate, Index Data, Colorado Alliance of Research Libraries side of things, these weekly meetings wound up bonding a group of folks who work together virtually in a very rich way. Yes, we face challenging meetings, but the amount of collaboration and genuine desire to help us restart this service was awesome. We also utilized the wonderful Folio community in Slack, asking questions from folks who had been through this implementation or development process, sharing information in a very rich way that we hope to pay back in the future. We restarted our lending service in July and our borrowing service in August, and have had smooth sailing due to the hard work, preparation, and continued support of all of the amazing colleagues who made this enormous project a success. Next up, I'm going to pass it to Erin. Next slide, please.
Hi everyone, my name is Erin Block and I am the eResources Metadata and Reporting Manager here at CU. Before migration, we were presented with the problem of how to run lists and gather data in Folio. In other words, without Sierra Create Lists, what will we do? How will we keep reporting needs afloat and not get stranded here in the sand dunes of data migration? Next slide, please. CU Boulder had been using Sierra and CreateList for many, many years. Most library employees understood the tool and were very comfortable running lists on their own. CreateList had a query builder that used Boolean operators for constructing queries, and no other specialized tools or skills were required. It was fairly easy and intuitive to query metadata and create lists for export on demand. Next slide, please. With the decision to migrate to Folio, we knew we needed to be prepared with reporting solutions post-migration. So in August of 2021, the reporting pod was established. The pod's main task was to understand what reports were being run in Sierra and work to translate those reports into SQL queries that would enable workflows to continue post-migration without too much disruption. In June of 2023, we went live with Folio, and later that summer, it was determined that a reporting group was still very much needed, and so the reporting pod became the Library Reporting and Business Intelligence Guild. Next slide, please. So how will we manage reporting in Folio anyway? As the temporary reporting pod moved to a permanent guild, work continued to translate queries and develop new queries for Folio data and MetaDB. Many of these queries were things such as weekly, monthly, or quarterly holdings reports, circulation reports, and missing book reports, things that were needed for existing workflows and daily operations of the library. Most members of the guild were not familiar with SQL and worked together using LinkedIn learning classes, books, and plain old trial and error to learn this new language. Guild members worked to understand the new structure of data in Folio and to create documentation. The guild also played a key role in data cleanup post-migration. Members wrote queries to gather records that needed fields cleaned up or changed for the cataloging cleanup pod and for the prospector restart pod, among others. Reporting needs in Folio are currently mostly met with MetaDB, which pulls data from Folio modules into a relational database and then can be queried. We use dBeaver as the database tool and interface for querying MetaDB. Next slide, please. The Library Reporting and Business Intelligence Guild meets on a regular basis and has set up workflows for different reporting needs. We have utilized the existing university-wide ticketing system, ServiceNow, to help manage requests. We also set up MetaDB accounts and training sessions for individuals who have regular reporting needs and express interest in learning new skills. The Guild manages a repository of queries on GitHub and advises on the use of reporting tools and data retention. We have also set up the reporting app in Folio and connected it to our GitHub repository. We are incrementally rolling this out to select library employees to run on-demand smaller reports. However, there are current constraints on exports, which limits functionality for large lists and projects. Next slide, please. When it became clear that a more user-friendly tool than dBeaver would be needed to ease the transition to Folio, Arthur Aguilera, head of our collection development and assessment section, and an active member of the guild, used MetaDB and Power BI to create dashboards for common reporting needs, such as collection statistics, fund balances, and physical circulation activity. These have been really an amazing resource for on-demand access to reports. And now I'll pass it off to Rocco to talk about the logistics of moving collections.
Thank you very much, Erin. My name is Rocco Labriola, and I'm the head of Business, Earth Science and Map, GEML, and Music Branch Services section. The final process we want to talk about is how do we move a collection for a library renovation? Next slide, please. So first, I want to briefly explain some of the background for this collection move. The Engineering Math and Physics Library, or GEML Library, experienced extensive flooding in January 2022. While we were able to protect most of the books in the collection, the electronic movable shelving progressively got worse as a result of this flooding. We eventually got to the point that about 40% of the shelving was inoperable. By late 2024, we had secured renovation funding and were given about 6 months to transfer part of the collection to offsite storage at Pascal, and then move the remaining collection to a temporary location for the duration of the renovation. Next slide, please. So that's the background and the big challenges we were facing. As we started to dive into this, the scope of the project revealed tons of stakeholders, which I have listed on the left. These stakeholders were going to be needed to handle the various elements of this move, which are all listed on the right, including identifying and pulling material for transfer, updating these items in both Folio and Viewfind, how to handle physically moving all these items, and communicating all of this with internal and external stakeholders. It was a very large project, and the thing we noticed was there was no natural guilds or pods to lead this. While we could have proposed a pod for this, we didn't feel we had the time, and it wasn't really a good fit for this project. Instead, we decided to go with a practical position-based project management. The project managers included the head of materials management, which was Claire at the time, myself as the head of branch services, and our engineering librarian. Next slide. Okay, so now I want to focus in on two of the examples of the work we had to do in Folio. The first major task we had was pulling and transferring 38,000 items to offsite storage at Pascal. To do this, we developed a 13-page instruction document detailing the entire process of identifying, pulling, bulk editing, and transferring items to Pascal. I have the steps listed here with screenshots from our documentation. So our first step was we needed to upload a single column spreadsheet of barcodes for items we wanted to edit. These barcodes were individually scanned in by student employees after pulling books from our list of items we transferred. Second, we would select the changes we wanted to make to these records. We were updating the permanent item location to Pascal, the temporary item location to en route to Pascal, and then we were adding a Pascal offsite note to the items to indicate the month and year that we were transferring. We used the temporary location because these items weren't immediately sent and processed at Pascal. They were kind of in this in-between limbo location where it'd be hard to find them if they were requested. This temporary location would prevent hold requests until they were processed at Pascal, at which point Pascal would remove the temporary location and these items would become available again. With these selected, we would run bulk edit for the first time. Moving to our third step, we'd actually have to run bulk edit again to make the note that we added a staff-only note. We were doing this in Poppy, but in Quisnalia, you are actually given the option to do this in the same step as adding a note. So that actually would be a lot easier now. Finally, we would have to go in and make manual changes to any items that gave errors during this update. The most common reason for errors were issues with spreadsheet formatting or cataloging inconsistencies with the records. We did this over the spring semester and were able to update 38,000 items and send them to Pascal, where they were processed and made available for requests. This shows how we use bulk edit to help accomplish this major task, but I also want to note that I skipped a lot of steps in the work we had to do, including generating a list of items to pull using MetaDB, managing and training our student employees to do all of the pulling, scanning, and adding Pascal stickers to these items, dealing with missing and damaged items found, scheduling pickup of these materials, and adapting this procedure as we develop it. Next slide, please. So that was one example of using bulk edit, but we actually also use bulk edit to manage moving the remaining collection to its temporary storage facility until we can move it back to the renovated space. Our consideration for this was that we needed a way to stop requests while the collection was moving between locations, which could take several weeks. We decided to do this using bulk edit to change the status of all available items to unavailable for the duration of the move, and then switching everything back to available once the entire collection had moved. In order to do this, we needed to work with communication, let stakeholders know that this collection was going to be temporarily unavailable. And we also put a public facing note on the items to indicate that they were unavailable temporarily. This was for 55,000 items. So we had to plan this out to make sure that when we were bulk editing, we were minimizing disruptions. We also developed a contingency plan if the move took an unexpectedly long amount of time. And that plan involved updating the collection to available using call numbers, which I actually think probably would have been a mess. So thankfully, we didn't actually have to do that. That's using bulk edit with the collection move. But in addition to using bulk edit, we had to go into the settings of Folio to help display this information for internal and external users. We proposed updating both the Folio location name and discovery display name of items, as well as the tenant for items that were going to temporary locations. You can see the changes we proposed for items that were going to the basement of Norland Library, which is our main branch location. This location was not going to be publicly accessible. So we adopted a closed stacks language for these location names to indicate to patrons they wouldn't be able to browse these items. We also changed the tenant library to Norland so that the books would get routed there and pick slips would be printed at Norland. We also moved some of our popular items to a nearby branch library and used this at Earth Science and Math Library language for these items. These items also had their tenant location library updated at Earth Science and Math Library. Next slide. So this is what one of the items that got moved into this temporary location will look like in our catalog right now. You can see the closed stacks language on the location and the place a hold option, which in conjunction, we hope communicates that the collection is not browsable, but you can still get access to these items by placing a hold. And I'm gonna pass it back to Jalea to recap our themes covered.
All right, so thank you for everyone's examples that you have provided. So just to recap some of the themes that we've talked about, we talked a lot about the organizational structure and various adaptations that we've had over time, the communication that we've had to do with various stakeholders on projects, changes in how we make decisions, Folio being the technology change, and then also this culture of sharing that we really adapted that comes kind of from the community development of Folio and then bringing that into the projects that we had as well. So expanding beyond Folio. So some of the takeaways are that the culture has adapted at CU Boulder with Folio and as a result of Folio. So I think our experiences going through Folio migration and dealing with the various challenges and issues that we have had to deal with post-migration has made us more flexible and more adaptable to all these changes. It's definitely been more complex post-migration, but as said, we are a lot more flexible as an organization. So not only is Folio iterative, but our approach to projects and problems have become iterative. Folio definitely has required more communication among everyone working in Folio, but our communication has become better because we have to work so closely together. We now have much better, like, formal and informal connections with each other. We have a better understanding of who does what, basically, in the organization, and so we often bring the right people to the table most of the time. And so I do think there's a lot less of a siloed organization. Post-migration has been different than pre-migration. We have different challenges and but also different approaches and different sort of tools in our toolbox to use. And then the reciprocal and community aspect is something that people have really appreciated that are working within the tool, but as I said, it has permeated beyond just Folio. It's really, you know, there's more community spirit across the libraries and with our law library as well. So where do we go from here? We continue with the flow. So we definitely have ways to continue our improvement with communication. That's always something to work on. We're much more comfortable with change. With groups and systems, we're more flexible. And then I think one thing that we is a next thing to work on is sort of increasing this outreach and participation from non-regular Folio users, particularly liaisons and public services colleagues who aren't using Folio on a day-to-day basis. And so there is a lot more room to communicate and bring them into sort of this new culture that we have. And so with that, thank you all. And we will now open it up to questions, either online or in person.
And you can also put in any questions in the chat as well.
I'm good.
Everybody can hear me? Okay. I'm from Stanford and we migrated a couple of years ago as well. And reporting is still kind of an issue for us. It is an issue. I was very interested in what you were saying about using your ticketing system for reports requests. Could you talk a little bit more about that and how you've divided up the work of creating reports amongst your staff?
Yes, excellent. Erin, do you want to take that question?
Sure. So it's we created a new division to assign tickets to the guild, and we have three main members who take query requests, and we kind of along the lines of going with the flow and our increased communication. We all kind of have, it's worked out really well of people who have the most expertise in that area grabbing that ticket. So the guild has maybe around 8 members or something. And there's 3 people that will claim tickets based on area of expertise. If it's more of an e-resources cataloging question, I'll jump on that. Arthur Aguilera will jump on circulation or acquisitions type type queries, so we're pretty good about just self-monitoring that, and there are those tickets get assigned to us from, I'm not sure who actually assigns those tickets, but it has worked really quite well instead of just getting emails all the time. I don't know if I can expound any other points for you. But yeah, I think it's worked well because people are very used to submitting ServiceNow tickets for like computer problems or we can't access this resource type problems. So it was something that people were already familiar with, knew how to access and kind of knew how to interact with.
What is the volume like of the requests and what is the expectation regarding turnaround time?
That is part of kind of what we've tried to get people to understand is when they submit a query to let us know, this is urgent, I need this by the end of the week or by the end of today if possible. So to give us some sort of expectation on how fast the turnaround time needs to be. And also, I think we've been pretty forthright in, we have a limited amount of people doing this. We aren't experts, and so we can't promise that we'll meet your timeline requirement if it's a really fast turnaround. I think the query requests have dropped off significantly. It was quite overwhelming, around migration and just after migration, just for cleanup projects. Now maybe it's a handful a month, if that. It's not a super high request demand right now.
And I will add to that, Erin and the group has done some excellent training. So if you had some super users who were like submitting requests like once a day, then you could be like, hey, here's a query. Here's how you use dBeaver. And they might alter the query in simple ways to get exactly what they want on a daily basis. But that can also help offload some of that effort.
Yeah, we've definitely tried to create like template queries where, if someone needs to find something in a mark field, they can take this template query, change what they're looking for, as they don't have to create the query. But I think a lot of, like Nicole said, super users, high volume users, know how to just alter queries right now.
In your organization, do you find that a lot of the same people are on the pods or in the guilds? Because, expertise, and then there's the people who actually have to keep working. So,
yeah, Jalea or Claire, do you want to kind of?
Go ahead, Jalea. Sorry.
I was going to say, I remember definitely during the pre-migration phase, I think there was also there were a lot of people who were not interested in participating in the Folio migration, and there was a handful of people who were very interested. So there was self-selection going on. I feel like more people have become more engaged, and some of the pods are kind of like it's very open membership. So like if you're interested, and so I mean, from the acquisitions perspective on the physical processing pod, I think almost there's like four of us who show up to every meeting because people are engaged in that. So I think the interest has expanded. I don't know. Yeah, Claire.
No, I agree with what you said. I feel like we've also reached a point where for certain groups, like I'm thinking of the Circulation Guild in particular, that membership also has an option where you can just be as needed. And so some of the structures have adapted in that way, where if it's a particular issue that we know is going to intersect with other folks' day-to-day work, they will be brought in for that particular conversation. So that's to eliminate them having to come to every single meeting. And so I think it's iterative. It just depends on what it is. And I will just echo what Jalea was saying. I think there is increasing engagement as we continue to move forward. Folks are really starting to see how things intersect.
Yeah, and I'll add the cataloging cleanup pod has four people on it. We have about 50 people who do cataloging. So that's been really helpful as we define our roles to have that point person who can then go to the larger group so that the larger group doesn't have to come to every meeting, but can trust that their point person is going to bring that information back to them.
It's sort of a follow-up question. How often, and I know this will vary, and you've kind of talked about how often pods or guilds. So I would imagine a pod would meet pretty regularly because you're trying to get through a problem. But I'm just trying to imagine how many hours you're spending in meetings.
Yeah. So the cataloging one is whenever Chris lets us. Chris Long, who's here, is our cataloging head. And that was once a month, not even then. So it was, we're doing a lot of work in between on Teams, and me emailing Emily being like, what do we do? And for that particular pod, that's how we've been doing that work. Do you guys want to talk to your other groups?
Sure. So the Folio Guild, our governance guild, we meet every other week, but we will often do asynchronous approvals of things that need to move faster than that. And then physical processing pod is every other week as well. And no, it's monthly now. It was every other week and now it's monthly, I believe. We're trying to scale back. But there is asynchronous work that happens on Teams. So if folks are wanting feedback on things, they can get that. Prospector Restart Pod was every other week as well. So biweekly seems to be a trend. And then our Index Data Clarivate bigger meeting with external stakeholders was weekly for an hour and a half. So maybe it just depends on the project.
Any questions online? I don't think we see any. All right. If there are no other questions, then we can say thank you all for coming.
Thanks for coming, everybody.